Welcome to the Gospel Rain podcast, part of the teaching ministry of Dr. Matt Brown and Dr. Micah Carter. We hope you will find gospel-centered answers to your questions about theology and the Christian life. And now, we welcome you to the Gospel Rain conversation.
Glad you could join us today for the Gospel Rain podcast. Glad you're back with us. I am without my partner, co-pilot, Micah Carter. Micah is out of town this week, headed to Washington, D.C. to be with his son, who plays in the band at the Ripley School. And so his whole family is going to get a chance to go together and be spend some time together in Washington, D.C. So it'll be a lot of fun for them and get a chance to be together just for a little while outside of Ripley and have a big time. So anyway, with me today is a special guest and a friend of mine, Chester Harrison. Brother Chester Harrison is what we call our, your initials have changed over time. Right now I would call you our DOM, all right, for short. Many times you're called AMD, and there have been other names for you, probably not, some of them not so good. But anyway, right. There's a lot of initials for you guys. What's the one that they're using now? D-O-M, A-M-D.
It's according to which group you're talking to.
Where you are.
An associational missions director is okay. What we are.
Okay. And so an A-M-D. All right. Yeah. D-O-M used to, I guess, is the older term, director of missions.
Director
right.
of missions, right.
So anyway, Chester is our A-M-D in Prentice County, which is where I'm located at Gaston Baptist Church. And so we wanted to have just a little bit of time to be able to talk together because Mike and I always have talked about this. We're aware that a lot of our church members may not understand the role of an AMD. Many of our church members know we have one, but they may not understand exactly what that means. And so what I wanted to do is have a little bit of conversation, a little bit about what that means and then how you work together as part of the North American Mission Board and their strategy for being able to do mission work in local communities. And so anyway, that involves a lot of things. We'll get into some of that in just a few minutes. But before I do all that, Chester, I just wanted to ask you if you would just to introduce yourself just a little bit. You used to be a pastor, have been a pastor, and you have also served our country. So I want you to share a little bit about that. Just share with us who you are.
Okay. Chester Wayne Harrison. That's how most people in Alcorn County know me because of that's where my wife, Glenda, and I grew up. And that's where I attended church at Holly Baptist Church and I was served as a deacon there, Sunday school teacher and all that. Surrendered to preach when I was 29 and everything after a run for a while from God running. But surrendered to preach at 29 in 1979. I've been a pastor for almost 39 years. And most of that 39 years, the last 2 years, I've been an AMD, a DOM, or whatever we are. But, you know, it's been a journey. It really has. I was married with two children, and we left what was a good income, a very good income for a dumb old country boy, and we gave all that up. Not a pat-me-on-the-back thing, but you have to give up,
right?
You know, when you're going to serve the Lord. And my wife didn't marry a preacher, and she's done an excellent job in the transition, allowing God to transition her and to be a pastor's wife. And we've been everywhere, you know, and God's opened up a lot of doors. We've done a lot of mission work here in the United States, but also overseas, taking teams. But also I've done some of those that have been kind of risky. Don't take teams.
You've told me about some of that before. Where all have you served in, since we're talking about mission work, where all have you served on mission in different parts of the world?
When I've taken groups to Russia on two different occasions and to Belize on 13 different occasions in Central America. But when I go into the Muslim countries, I don't take a team. It's a little too risky.
Yeah.
And I've been a part of a team. There was a group of six of us several years ago, early 2000s, and we came from all different parts of the country. And it was a team of six, and we smuggled Bibles and shared the Gospels in Turkey, Iraq, and Iran. And it was quite the war was still going on while we were doing this, and it was quite an adventure.
I bet it was.
And quite an adventure. I've been to, of course, been to those countries, Egypt and Niger, Guinea, trying to think, Pakistan twice. The last time was a real adventure in Pakistan. Mm. We changed safe houses four times a day the second week to stay away from the Taliban. It was, you know, riding a sandwich between two bodyguards on a motorcycle at 2:30 in the morning, going through a Taliban-controlled city to go to another safe house. It was quite an adventure.
I bet it was. I bet it was. So you're most of those times you're bringing Bibles,
yes.
Sharing the gospel. I guess you couldn't do that on the street. You just sort of had to smuggle those Bibles, do that in secret.
That last time at Pakistan, it was kind of interesting because I did preach in an open air meeting on the street.
Really?
I had five bodyguards on the stage and bodyguards all out in the crowd. And bless their heart, their intention was good. But, you know, when you're armed with a 9mm or a single-shot shotgun, that's not much. But it was the thought that counted, you know.
That's about all, right?
But it was just a God thing. It really was.
That's cool. Now, you served our country in the military. Tell us a little bit about that.
When I got out of high school, Glenda and I got married. We didn't start our family right away, but I had no intention of going to college. I needed to go into the military. My dad was World War II vet, and so I wanted to go in the military. I wanted to go to Vietnam, not a warmonger or anything like that. Just it's my responsibility.
Right.
And so I did that. I served with a Ranger Battalion in 1969 with a Big Red 1, 1st Infantry Division. And the first part of 1970, and then the rest of 1970 with the 101st Airborne. I was a jungle fighter. I lived in the jungle the whole time.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? You've got a really cool story, and I've heard some of what you've shared with different groups, school groups,
right.
And students and those kind of things. You've shared some of what you've been through, and I've heard you just in personal conversations share some of those things. So I wish we had more time to talk about a lot of that, but I really appreciate you, and we appreciate you serving our country.
Thank you. My joy.
In such a great way. We really appreciate that. You guys are our heroes, and we appreciate that. I know you would never claim to be a hero, but but you are, and we really appreciate that. So you've been serving as an AMD for the last couple of years. Tell us a little bit about what an AMD does. I'm just going to ask some of the real practical questions.
Sure.
All right. Who in the world employs you? Who are you serving exactly as you are serving in a capacity within the Southern Baptist Convention, Southern Baptist Life? Tell us how all that happens.
As far as what an AMD is, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Are you the one I should be talking to?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm thinking everything seems to be in a bit of transition right now. And I think rightfully so, because certainly no disrespect, but the times have changed. The culture's changed here.
Sure.
And so has the role of the AMD, and it needs to be. I am employed by the Baptist churches, the Southern Baptist churches that belong to the Prentice Baptist Association. That's where my pay comes from. I don't get any pay from Jackson. I don't get any pay from the North American Mission Board.
Gotcha.
It's strictly Prentice Baptist. And while I am a Southern Baptist and have been all of my life, that's, for me, I look at that is a vehicle, a tool for which I can share Jesus with lost people. And I do believe in our missions efforts, the way that we do it, cooperation, everybody putting their money and their prayers together, certainly makes for greater mission explorations and than doing it as an individual. Not against supporting an individual.
Sure.
I've got some folks that I support individually.
Sure.
You know, but I believe in the cooperative program. But yeah, I serve Prentice County, and the association, as far as with the Southern Baptist Convention, is like the local church. It's autonomous. I don't have to answer to Jackson or Northern
right.
American Mission Board. My responsibility is to the churches, and I really feel the call on my life. I had no aspirations of being an AMD. I really didn't. Not that it's a bad thing, but
sure.
I just, hey, I'm a pastor and a preacher, and I was good to go with that. But this is where God wants me right now, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to serve Him. My deal is that I encourage pastors and their families and our churches to reach lost people and we want to start right here. We don't want to overlook Prentice County. Mm-hmm. And the way I look at it, I am the Associational Missions Director of Prentice Baptist Association, so my main responsibility has to be in sharing the gospel here in Prentice County. And so that's what we – that's the underlying thing. Now, we do other things,
yes,
but that's the underlying thing.
Well, you mentioned cooperation earlier and the cooperative program. You mentioned that. Give us a little bit of insight about how cooperation works within Southern Baptist churches, particularly in, say, in this county, Prentice County. We have how many churches are in our cooperative group in Prentice County?
26. We have 26 Southern Baptist churches.
Okay. So within in cooperating, tell us a little bit about what we mean there. I know we would explain it as Southern Baptists, and we often do, where we don't operate from a top down kind of structure where decisions come from the top, and then we all have to do that. We sort of operate, if you were to flip that upside down, it's sort of, you know, bottom top kind of thing. It's where the churches are autonomous, and we tell Southern Baptist Convention how to operate.
Exactly.
That's sort of how that works, all right? It's sort of oversimplified, but that's sort of how that works. So when we talk about cooperation within Prentice County among churches that are autonomous, that's a little bit of a difficult thing to accomplish, isn't it? Because these churches are 26 Baptist churches who can operate on their own. Nobody tells them what to do or how to do it. It's the church on their own. How do we cooperate together, and what are the strategies right now for helping churches be able to learn to cooperate together and do all of them do well?
Well, when I accepted the responsibility to be the Associational Missions Director here, I knew that, well, I won't say I knew, my opinion was that things had to be different, and I'm glad that NAM and Jackson, Mississippi, the Mississippi Baptist Convention, I'm glad they're seeing that, you know, that a lot of these guys are young guys that are coming on. I went to a NAM training for revitalization last month and was introduced to a 22-year-old, or a young man that started being an AMD at 22.
He was
still in college. He was still in seminary, and an association in North Carolina asked him to be their AMD. And so it's not just a youth thing, but it's trying to address the difference in culture. When I'm 67 years old, when I was a kid, AMD work, it was, I forget what it was called then, but
I don't know.
You know, he had an office about a third the size of this office that I'm sitting in right now. It's basically a typewriter and a file cabinet and a desk. And I didn't know what he did, you know, but he supposedly did something. And but now it's changed. You know, we've got all of the electronic gadgets and everything.
Right.
And for us, this thing of cooperation, God gave me a word. It's not a new word or anything like that, but it's about being, instead of just cooperation, it's about community. And I think that, because you can cooperate with people you don't know, people you don't like, but community means, to me, community means, you know, I'm going to get to know somebody. And that's how I want us at Prentice Baptist, I want us to become a community, not just cooperate, not just getting along, but moving along and moving forward for the cause of Christ. And so that's sort of been a goal, I guess, or a vision that God has given me, is to try to lead our churches to, not that we don't get along, but that we just get to know each other.
Right.
Just get to know each other, well, for the cause of Christ.
And I'll be as transparent as I can, as much as possible, without getting myself in trouble.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. I don't want you to do that.
As a pastor, I know one of the things that is constantly on my mind is my church family. All right.
Sure.
I'm very concerned with my church family. I'm concerned with the growth and the success and the health of my church family and discipleship and evangelism, all those other kind of ways. But one of the things that automatically comes into the picture when you begin to cooperate with people is that all of a sudden it's not about building your own little kingdom, your own little church. It's about building God's kingdom. It's about reaching people for Christ, that is something that goes across boundary lines of churches. Do you see that, I can sort of be a little transparent there and realize that there would be a weakness on my part too, because a lot of times I'm so focused,
sure,
on my church grounds, my church family, my whatever, that a lot of times if I'm not careful, I don't find myself wanting to cooperate as much with others just because I'm so busy and I've got,
sure,
enough to do here, not because I don't want to. So do you find that being a problem, a difficulty trying to, because as I've said, you came from a military background, right, where you had opportunity to tell people what to do, okay?
Right.
Now as an AMD,
I can't tell anybody.
You got no authority at all, right? You can't tell a single soul what to do, and no church has to go with anything you suggest or anything. So is that a difficulty now working with pastors and churches who can be, let me just say, territorial? Because I realize my own weakness sure. there too, to have to begin to cooperate together for the sake of the gospel.
Yeah, I won't say it, but it is a challenge. It is a challenge because, and listen, if a pastor is not so much territorial, but if he's not so much focused on his people, he probably doesn't need to be the pastor of that church.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true.
Because, I mean, you really got to care about your flock. We are kingdom people. But God's given each pastor a flock.
Right.
And so you're not watching after everybody's flock.
That's right.
You're watching after your flock.
That's right.
And so that's very important. And I certainly wouldn't want to take away from that. And I think for me, I look at this, I only ask the association to come together 3 times a year. And I've spread those out. In the 2 years, we've made some changes to where it wasn't so close and eliminated something that wasn't quite necessary.
Right.
But we injected another meeting so that the association can come together 3 times. But not just for business, you know. Come together as an association. If we need to take care of business, we'll take care of business.
Right.
But have a good time in Jesus Christ, just the association together. And so that's what we've done with that. Like the crusade, obviously when you have a crusade, our association didn't put on the crusade, but we've supported it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
But there are people that can't be there, and we understand
right.
that. But as far as my job is not to have more meetings. In fact, I'm working on communication now. If I can ever get to the place where I can communicate with pastors, and that's hard.
And have less meetings. Yeah,
yeah.
I understand now.
Because I don't want to put a burden on the pastors
yeah.
or the churches.
Yeah.
And so that's the idea, is to have that happy medium. I just want to be here. I want my pastors and the churches, but especially my pastors, I want to know if they need me.
Hmm.
All I got to do is call me,
hmm.
you know. It doesn't have to be about anything important. It doesn't even have to be about anything theological.
Right.
If they just want to have a cup of coffee, I'm good to go.
Well, and some people have called the AMD position a pastor to pastors.
Yes, sir.
You know, pastors don't have a pastor. We hopefully, for example, in our church, we would have what we call a deacon family ministry, where most of our families, we try to at least have somebody who's reaching out to them, making sure they don't fall through the cracks, make sure they
right.
you know, have needs that we can meet, those kind of things. And so we're all trying to minister to the church family, and the pastor is usually a major player in all of that, because he's at the hospital, he's doing this, he's going there, but a pastor doesn't have one. He doesn't have a pastor. He doesn't get to have a pastor.
Right.
And so he doesn't get to have that spiritual guidance. He didn't get to, because he's sort of doing all that for everybody else. So an AMD, in some sense, can take that role for pastors. And do you see that as part of your role? I mean, as we're cooperating together, how do you see that as your sort of your influence among pastors?
I want to be that. It's not that I want to, because most of the time when you think about having a friend like that, a pastor, you're talking about somebody you can share your hurts with.
Sure.
And it's not that I enjoy hearing somebody hurt about their hurts, but I want to be that pastor. I want to be that pastor to every one of our pastors. I want them to know that they've got a friend. I try to tell these guys. I didn't grow up with this, but I've tried to, I've tried to let people know if I love them. I tell them that, and I tell you guys that I love you.
Yeah, you do.
I try to do that too much probably, but I'm trying to. Hey, Jesus did it a lot,
right?
And so. But I want pastors to know that, hey, if they want to talk to me, man, it's just the two of us talking, and it's not going anywhere. And I realize that kind of confidence comes with, that kind of trust comes with time. And
yeah.
I understand that.
Well, and that's one of the things you've done well, is be able to build relationships with pastors where they can trust that it's not going to go anywhere, that they do need somebody to talk. A pastor can't, it's very difficult for a pastor to be able to, quote, let his hair down. Right, with his people,
sure.
because he doesn't want to become so vulnerable among some others, that he talks about so many of the different things that he knows about that he can't share with everybody else. And those are just things that he has to keep locked in a lot of times, and even sometimes keep that away from his family. And so doesn't have time to or opportunity to share that with anybody. So you become, at least I know you have been for us in Prentice County, you become that outlet for us as pastors to be able to share. If we need to, we'd be able to call on somebody and say, hey, I just got an issue I need to work through. So I'm thankful at least for that part of your role. I'm curious, though, as we talk about this, is this a – all right, let me ask you this way. First of all, do you have a job description?
Yes, I do. It's very generic, though.
Is that part of your job description, being a pastor to pastors?
Not in those words, but it is in the job description.
Good. So our churches sort of expect that from you, that you would fulfill that kind of role. I wonder, in our associations around us in the state of Mississippi, if that's a common thing. Do you? I'm just curious. Just you know, I'm just sort of picking at your brain a little bit. But is that a common thing where do all of our AMDs see it the same way, or are you allowed as an AMD, because you're working with autonomous churches, are you allowed to sort of give interpretation to what your role is?
I think there's some of both. Listening to the other AMDs, we do get together every other month. The AMDs do, the local AMDs here in North Mississippi, and I'm sure the others do in other regions. And I hear the guys talk, and, they're talking about, of course, these guys have tenure on me, with the exception of one guy.
Sure.
And so I do hear them talk a lot. They talk about all the calls they get and everything like that. And I'm assuming, I don't ask because it's confidential, but I'm assuming that, that those are not always pleasant calls.
Sure.
That somebody's hurting or something, a need in a church. So I'm assuming, just going from that, is that that's a very common understanding of what an AMD is supposed to be, is to be there for everybody in the association. I'd sit down and talk, and I have. I've had people that have called me that wanted some TLC, that didn't want to tell their pastor because they didn't they didn't want their didn't want to be embarrassed in front of their pastor. I always try to tell them that their pastor's the guy to go to. Mm. Don't let your pastor's not going to think less of you.
Right.
But I but that's been on the very 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 minimum. But I hope that people are beginning to see that I really do have a heart for people. I really do care about people, and I want to help people as best I can.
Well, and I think it's real clear in Prentice County that you do. And you bring up something that's pretty interesting. I know a lot of pastors, we were talking about you being a pastor to pastors, sometimes pastors need to tell you things that are maybe negative in their church community. But at the same time, there may be church members who are not very happy with their pastor. And so who needs somebody to talk to, maybe need some direction. Have you seen in your short period of time being serving as an AMD, is that a common occurrence? Do you have people who say, you know what, we're not happy with our pastor. We need to help. We need some help. We need some guidance. Can you, again, an autonomous church, can you give guidance, and how do you do that?
No, I've had very little. Most of the contact that I've had has been indirect. Say, well, we don't like this about our pastor. We don't like that. But my response to the person, the indirect person, the middle person, is the same that I would give to the person if they had called me directly, is that you just need to sit down with your pastor and pray for your pastor, because my involvement in any kind of situation has to come from either the pastor of the church. And I'm talking about a situation, would have to come from the pastor of the church, or from a motion that where a majority said, we want you to come and deal with this situation in our church, not an individual calling and filing a complaint. And it's not that, maybe sometimes the complaints are justified. I'm not making a decision on that. It's just that there's a right way to do things and a wrong way. And my job is not to lord over anyone. And so my intervention in a situation is to pray for them, And I've been asked to, you know, I've had some folks wanted me to, you know, do this. I'm like, really? This is not, you know, this is not big on the scale of what God wants to do in our community to deal with something like this.
Yeah.
But I assure them that I'll be praying for the situation, and that's what I do.
Well, that's good. Well, as an AMD, that is one of the things that I've noticed in Prentice County, at least, that you that you have done really well is to try to figure out a way to operate well with church families, and because you're preaching a lot of times too. Yeah. And when a pastor doesn't have someone in the field of the pulpit, he's going to be gone or out of town, something like that, or sick, then he can call on you, and sure, and perhaps you make him come and fill the pulpit for him, which is a great thing. So you're working with pastors, at the same time you're working with church members too, to foster community, to foster a cooperation among these churches. And I can imagine that's not an easy thing to do. When you're not overseeing as an authority, but sort of within your influence, 26 churches that range over an entire county. You've done this before, I think. But how long does it take you to travel among all these different churches, and how often are you doing that?
Well, Ed Ernest and I had an idea, and sometimes my ideas are not bad, but I got Ed because he had a good camera, and I wanted to make a picture of all of the church buildings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I got with Ed, and he was going to use his camera so that he could plug it right in. And it is on our website, on the Prentice Baptist page and Facebook and everything. And we made a picture of all the churches. We drove around. I tried to be a good steward, you know, sometimes you have to overlap a little bit.
Right.
But it was 91 miles.
91 miles among all the churches.
Right.
Interesting.
And
that's
so
interesting.
Yeah, I had no idea either. But it's 91 miles between all of the churches. And so, yeah, we're spread out. We're different, not just size-wise, but each church has its own, I'll use the word style. I don't know what that means, but, you know, as far as, and I'm not talking about just music. I'm talking about just worship. So
right.
It's a lot more relaxed than others. And but I found that most of our churches, I'll say this, in all of our churches, one of the common denominators, and I realize you put the good face on for the visiting guy.
Right, right.
But all of the churches have been very warm and receiving. And when Glenda goes with me a lot on Sunday mornings and everything, and the churches have been very warm and receiving. And so I just try to be a regular guy, just try to fit in. Right now I'm still trying to go around and hear guys preach in their pulpit that I haven't yet heard, because we've got some new guys. And Sunday morning, I went to church, and the guy said, "Hey, you want to preach for us today?" I said, "I sure do, but I'm not going to. I came to worship with y'all and hear you preach."
That's cool.
And so
that's cool. Well, I appreciate the work that you do in helping us be able to cooperate. You mentioned something earlier, and I wanted to ask you about this. You said something about NAMB training, and just for the sake of everybody understanding what that means, NAMB is NAMB, and that's North American Mission Board is what
right.
we're talking about there. When we're talking about bigger picture now outside of Prentice County, you're talking about going to North American Mission Board training. What does that mean? How is the North American Mission Board cooperating together with our local associations and churches to be able to help you guys and help us be able to cooperate together?
Something that NAMB has done just recently is something that God put on my heart 3 or 4 years ago. And I'm not against church planning and all of that. That's very important. But what I was seeing a few years ago was how many churches we have that are struggling, and we weren't doing anything for that. And now, just in the last year or two, I've seen us move toward that, and it's called revitalization.
Right.
And I got to looking at revitalization, been reading a lot on it the last few years, even before it was called that, and it's like, gosh, I've been doing this all my life. Every church I've gone to has been a struggling church.
Right.
We have an idea that revitalization is a church that's running 6 and about to close their doors. It can be, or it can be a church running 600. If the Spirit's not there, and if they're not
That's
moving.
Right. Right.
And so this training that I went to last month was a revitalization training, very good stuff. But it wasn't cookie cutter stuff, okay? Mm. It's stuff that very practical that I can come back. I can incorporate into a ministry that fits us. In fact, I've called mine Refresh.
Mm.
And, you know, to to not have to use anybody's logo or anything like that. I've got a Brother Warren up at Alcorn County. He's calling his revision. And everything, he went to the same training that I did. And it was an excellent training, but it was something that, that we can put into practice in any size church. And I'm hoping that I haven't pushed it a lot and won't push it, but make it available to churches that if they want to revision, or mine is refresh, if they want to refresh, and I've got some things that I can help a church, any, it doesn't matter where they are in their spiritual walk, that will help them to see where they are and see where they want to go. So that's been a real blessing to see Nam come on board with that,
that's
provide
good.
That training.
That's great. I'm thankful that there is a at least a bigger picture, that there is a bigger picture of cooperation out there, not so it's not just relegated to the churches trying to figure it out on their own, but we do have the resources of our North American Mission Board that are trying to help us learn how to cooperate together. Because we, as we've already talked about, that's not an easy thing to do with churches that are autonomous. We want them to cooperate. We try to, I guess, suggest that churches do that, but we cooperate in a lot of different ways. We cooperate with local mission work, which you are working with every month to handle our local food bank through our Prentice County Baptist Association, and a number of different things that you're doing to try to keep us in cooperation as far as mission work goes.
Sure.
But we're cooperating together financially too, because the money. And a lot of our church members may not understand all this, and maybe we need to do a separate podcast on how cooperative program works. But a lot of church members just don't understand that when they tithe, there's a certain portion of that that's going to go to the cooperative program as Southern Baptist churches. And that money is sort of used to help us be able to cooperate together to reach the world for Christ. And so some of that money is being used locally to reach our community for Christ, and then it goes to our North American Mission Board. Much of that goes to our International Mission Board to try to literally make an impact around the world, no matter what size church you are.
Exactly. Amen.
So the cooperative program is a huge tool, and you're sort of a steward of part of that.
Yes, and I'd like to say something about that, because this has kind of changed in the last, I don't know, few years. When churches give to the cooperative program, and they send that to Jackson, and it's dispersed there, a lot of times churches put their associational missions money in there. It doesn't come back to us. And so people need to realize that if they want to give to the association, it needs to be two checks. Mm-hmm. You need to send one check directly to our office. We have received every once in a while a check from Jackson, but a lot of times that's not clearly marked, and it just goes into the cooperative program. And so people, churches may think they're supporting the association, and they may not be. And they may not be.
Well, that's a
good
point.
And so, you know, whatever percentage, most churches do a percentage or a flat amount each month. That check really needs to be mailed to the associational office if they want the association to have that money to use here locally.
Well, I'm glad you clarified that, because there may be a lot of churches who may not understand.
Sure.
May just understand that it's all supposed to go somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we just send it, and it's all supposed to get dispersed somewhere else.
It's gone. It's good, you know. But, you know, if there is a certain amount or percentage that they want used here locally, they need to send that to our office.
Good. And that money goes toward what? And we've talked a little bit about that's what, where you, I guess part of your salary comes from, but other things too we've talked about. What is all that money, say that our 26 churches are participating to give to the local association, what is that money going to accomplish here within our community?
For us, you know, I guess our biggest thing is probably the food ministry as far as hours and involvement. We've had to make some adjustments on the food ministry. We do it once a month now instead of twice a month. We had to handle some situations and be a good steward of God's money. We're spending about $200 to $2,500 a month, not counting the food that's given to us. And by the way, if anybody wants to do food drives, that's great, but I wish they would ask us for an order sheet so that we get the right stuff and everything. Because if somebody gives us a 2-gallon jar of peanut butter, we can't give that to one family and everybody else is getting 6 ounces.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know?
Okay, makes
and
sense.
So, and even with that, we have we tried to make evangelism not a pressurized thing, but we have a worship service. We call it. Listen, we've had people that wanted to join Food Church.
Yeah, I've heard you say that before.
and that's flattering. But we're really trying to connect these people with the local church and everything. But yeah, we're ministering to somewhere between 100 and 120 families a month. That's through the food day and then our agencies, Timber Hill and other agencies like that, that have disabled people that are not able to pick up and
I see. Do that. I didn't know that. So within a month, and we're ministering to that many people, are most of those in Prentice County, at least for us?
They're all in Prentice all County. Prentice County. People that come for our food, our clothing, they have to have proof of residence and sometimes a photo ID. And it can all be one the same if your driver's license is good.
Sure.
But, you know, if they moved here from Gulfport and they've got the same driver's license, but, you know, they've got the Gulfport address, then we require that they bring a phone bill or electric bill that proves that they live here. It's not that we don't want to feed people, but we've got to make sure we feed Prentice County people because everybody else's county's got food banks.
So they need to go to theirs.
And so we're not strict. We don't require anybody to come to food church. But we make it available, and we do stress the importance of it. Most of the people that get our food on food day, which is the second Thursday, anybody wants to help, come, be there before 9 o'clock. But we've had 42 saved that we know of.
Wow, that's awesome.
And then we had a couple, husband and wife, that come to our food that were saved Easter Sunday morning in one of our local churches.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great. And so we have volunteers from several of our churches around who are, again, cooperating together to run the thing, to be volunteers, right?
Yeah, we get the food on the Tuesday before the second Thursday. And I have a small group of people that come in. We usually make two or three pickup truck loads to pick up the food. And then on that Tuesday, they sack it because we've got a certain amount that we put in each sack, so everybody gets the same.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And then on Thursday, we distribute the food. We open the doors at 8, and they get a number, get registered, and all of that. And then we start the worship service at 9. It lasts about 30 minutes. Hey, we sing, and I preach, or I guess, if any of our pastors want to preach, just let me know. Once they leave there, I offer an invitation, but not a come-forward invitation, just a, hey, think about this. And then after their number is called, before they go back and get their food, they stop with a counselor. And the counselor just simply asks, is there something I can pray with you about today? And hey, if they're under conviction, they'll tell you.
Right.
If they're not, they'll say, I've got a, you know, uncle that needs praying for. And we pray for them, and then they go get their food, and they're gone.
That's good. It's a great ministry, and I know I have a couple of people, even from my own church, who go and volunteer regularly. And I've been there a number of times to help volunteer and just to be a part and help counsel or something like that. So it's good. And it is a great ministry. It's a great cooperative ministry within our community to be able to help those who cannot. Some of them are just in a bad spot. I know you've seen many of them are regular attenders. They come every single month, and that's how they get a lot of their food. Some people, you know, they've hit a hard time in their life, and they may need to come by for a month or two and get some food. And so it's available for those people either way.
Sure.
It's a great cooperative effort to be able to help people in our community. One more thing that I was going to mention too is that and pastors, churches may not quite understand this, but a lot of times our AMDs are ones who can help pastors be able to find a church to serve. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of phone calls, I'm sure, to say, "Hey, look, we're in need of a pastor. Do you know of anybody?" And you may get phone calls from pastors saying, "I'm looking for a church." And so sometimes you all can help with that pairing together of a church and a pastor. Do you get a lot of those kind of phone calls? I assume a lot of our guys do. A lot of our AMDs do.
I'm assuming everybody does. And I'll tell you that all of our churches have been filled for a few months now, and I'm thankful. I tease about that with the other AMDs. I said, all of our churches are filled, and I don't even have a pastor I really want to get rid of, you know, because we've got 26 really good men, and I don't want to lose anyone. However, my heart's desire is not important when it comes to God's desire. So I want my pastors to know, and I've always done this when I was a pastor and worked with staff. I wanted, hey, look, if you feel like God's telling you it's time for you to go, come to me and let me help you.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't want to hold back God's work. And like I say, I don't have a man I'd like to see leave. I really don't. Because all 26 of these men are friends. But I would like to have the kind of relationship that if one of them said, hey, you know, I'm really sensing an end to my ministry here, that they could come to me and allow me to just pray with them. And if I had opportunity to help them in sharing their name, because, hey, it's about God's work.
That's
and
good.
That's the deal.
That's good. The first church I served as a pastor came through a relationship and a connection with through an AMD. And I was able to sort of make that, he was able to sort of make that connection a little bit and got me there to preach. And so based on that relationship, that cooperative relationship,
sure.
That's sort of how I began to pastor my first church. So I'm thankful for your ministry and what you do among Prentice County Baptist, but what you're doing for the kingdom as a whole too, and how you're helping us learn to cooperate together. I know that's not an easy thing, but how you're helping us cooperate together, how you're being trained too in a lot of different ways, and looking at the bigger picture, not just our community, but there is a bigger picture out there, and how we're going to cooperate together as churches in this state and in this country to help reach other people for Christ and be on mission around the world. And you guys are a large part of helping us coordinate those efforts and working with volunteers.
Yeah.
That's all you're doing is working with volunteers.
Yeah, that's
so, but I appreciate that ministry. I'm gonna bring the podcast to a close a little bit. It's been a lot of fun. I think this has been really helpful for a lot of church members.
So.
I know some of our pastors may know a lot of this stuff who listen to the podcast, but some of our church members who may not understand this whole cooperative thing, they're in a Southern Baptist church, but they, you know, a lot of our listeners are and may not understand exactly how that works. So at least this gives a little bit of understanding, a little bit of flesh on that skeleton. But here's what I'm gonna end with, a segment that we normally end with. Sometimes end with. It's called One More Thing, all right? So this is a little bit of a different, we're just totally, absolutely shifting gears, all right? Changing
okay.
subject, okay? So what I want you to do is to think for just a second about something that you would share with us, just one more thing that would be interesting or fun for us to understand a little bit more about you, part of your story, something like that. And here's what I'm going to ask you to do, and I'm asking the favor. I don't ever do this with anybody else. I don't ever hem them in as to what they're going to share. I want you to share something with us that might be cool or interesting, something like that, about your time in the service. I've heard you share a lot about what you were able to do and some of the things that you experienced, and it's just always incredible to me. I'm a lover of the military, really am. I've had relatives to serve. My grandfather served in the 1st Marine Division, World War II, and so anyway, I'm just sort of a lover of our folks in the military and just have a high appreciation for you guys and ladies. But what I want you to do is just share maybe something that might be on your mind, something cool, something fun, something you've been able to do that maybe most of us have never been able to experience.
We did jump out of choppers. You tuck and roll. And most of the time we were no higher than, you know, than 10 to 20 feet.
And still, though.
I don't know how we didn't die.
That's what I'm thinking.
You tuck and roll with a 135-pound pack on your back. And you know, it was – I have and I, you know, to be honest, I really don't remember. I have two air medals with clusters, and that's about hot LZs, where you come into hot LZs and everything. And I, like I say, it's been so long. I just know I got two of them with clusters, and I don't know what a cluster means. I don't know how many you had to come into. But we were air mobile, obviously, and we would go into hot spots. But most of the time, we walked from day to day to the next ambush site. We hunted bad guys during the day, and then we would set up an ambush according to intelligence that night, and we'd always be moving toward that. That's what I did for a living, and they resupplied us every 4 days or more if we needed ammunition according to how much contact we made and everything. And but that was my life. And when we were choppered somewhere, when they would pick us up and move us, it was always, there's something, we need you there now. It was all, you know, and so somebody was in trouble, in harm's way. And so, gosh, I can tell you a lot of stories about, you know, how I should have died and how training, military training, it's in the book, how military training saved my life. God saved my life.
Sure.
But how God used military training to save my life when I was literally in over my head.
Wow.
You know, God's just good. And that's what I want people to understand from the books, or I'll come and speak at your church. You know, I want people to understand that God uses anything in your life if you'll just let him. Even the the difficult things or even the bad things, things that we maybe have to learn from, that God can use anything in your life to mold you and does to mold you and shape you to be what he wants you to be.
That's awesome. Well, I'm going to close the podcast. Chester, thank you, brother. Appreciate you being a part of this and just giving us a little bit of insight and clarity as to the role of an AMD. That gives us a little bit of help and how we can sort of cooperate together as Southern Baptist Church and Southern Baptist pastors. So we really appreciate that, and I appreciate your ministry and appreciate your service to our country. I really do. As I close the podcast, we just want to say thank you for being with us, being our listeners. Continue to share with your friends, that kind of stuff on social media. You can find us on iTunes. But also we're always asking you to do us a favor. If you're a listener, and some of your regular listeners, if you would, if you've got a question about some area of doctrine, theology, church life, that kind of stuff that you want to ask us about, and we'll try to have some conversation around and give you some answers, then all you have to do is submit that. Submit that on Facebook, on our Gospel Rain Facebook page. You can go to the website, gospelrain.com. You can submit it on Twitter, different places out there. You can help us out with that and give us some questions. That'll give us some opportunity to be able to talk about what is on your mind when it comes to theology and doctrine, Christian life issues, and all that. So, anyway, thanks for listening to Gospel Rain.
Thank you for joining us for the Gospel Rain podcast. We hope you've been encouraged today, and we pray the gospel will reign in your life this week. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or check out our website at gospelrain.com.